This F.R. Scott poem seems to go particularly well with Mark Morrison Reed's words at the beginning. This is about the Mackenzie River. This river belongs wholly to itself, obeying its own laws. Its wide brown eye softens what it reflects from sky and shore. The top water, calm, moves purposely in a cold sea. Underneath its stone bed shows sunken rock and swift and surface wave. Suspended in its liquid force is the soil of deltas. The Serbian valleys reach out to lake and spring in clefts of far hills and shed arteries of streams that stain the central flood. In spring thaw and spate, its wide levels rise slowly, fall like tides that start upstream and die at sea. A river so Canadian, it turns its back on America. The Arctic shore receives the vast flow, a maze of ponds and dikes, its land so bleak and bare, a single plume of smoke is a scroll of history.
Water defines the land we live in. And today, Unitarian Universalists across Canada are celebrating Sharing Our Faith Sunday. It's a particularly important day for UUs here in Halifax, perched as we are in the extreme East Coast, existing as we do 1,200 kilometers from the nearest other Unitarian church with a full-time minister. I'm not sure if some of the ones in the northeastern United States are closer than Montreal. We need to check that out. But we can get out of touch. We can feel disconnected from Unitarians across the country. And so this service becomes particularly important for us. Today we celebrate the covenant that binds us to congregations across Canada and to the larger UU faith community. Unitarian congregations across the country responding to a call from our National Association of Congregations will be celebrating our faith together by turning our attention to a common theme, the theme of water justice. And water is certainly a lot in the news lately, given that Canada is home to 20% of the world's fresh water. Water justice is a theme that will work across this country, although I suspect it works differently on the prairies, in the north, inland, on the shores of Lake Superior than it does perched here on the shores of the Atlantic Ocean. So I want you to help me here a little bit. I put together a list of some of the water issues that are before us here in Nova Scotia. I want you to go ahead and shout them out one at a time, the things that you're aware of that are water-related that are going on in Nova Scotia, and I'm going to check them off my list. Let's see if we can add some that aren't on my list. Anybody been watching the news lately and seen anything about
Northern Pulp?
Alton Gas.
Okay. Northern Pulp involves Bolt Harbor. We'll put them together.
Yes. Harriet.
Yeah, right. They didn't have that one.
Dry well. No.
They didn't have that either.
Drilling off
Sable Island. Just ocean drilling in general, I think, exploration.
Fracking.
I do have that.
The whale sanctuary.
Would they do it in Canada, but not in Nova Scotia at the moment?
It's not in there.
Well, the pulp mill is a problem. A prophet Acadia had said that 90% of the problem is with runoff from farms.
Yes, pollution of the Northumberland Strait just from farm runoff. Sewage running into the river, particularly the Lahade, is one that's getting a lot of publicity.
Plastics in the ocean. Plastics in the ocean. Plastics from Nova Scotia ending up in the Pacific garbage patch.
Has that been documented?
It's in region. Yep, it was published.
Yep. All the way around.
They absolutely found recycling that we had recycled in Nova Scotia in the Pacific garbage patch.
Oh, okay.
Because it was rejected and sold.
It got shipped to China.
It got shipped to China, and it was not high enough quality. It was Ben's bread bags. And, yeah.
Okay. You get the idea. There are a lot of issues. Here's some other ones that we didn't touch on so far, but the condition of salmon rivers on the East Coast is I'm looking at Colin now, tidal power, and the harnessing of tidal power, and the questions that that brings along with it. The fact that we're converting to a green economy and getting our power less and less from coal, but it's going to be coming from a lot of it, if they ever build it, is coming from Muskrat Falls, which is another major issue. Now, Lunenburg Harbor is in the news regularly because of the pollution and the Spanish in that harbor. The entangled right whale. I don't know if this happens across the country, but in Nova Scotia, just about every news story, every CDC announcement has a story about great whales and how they're doing. The depletion of fish stocks on the East Coast, the collapse of the cod fishery. And last but not least, rising sea levels from global warming that will impact us here. So as I thought about this, I thought these are problems of the profane. But that doesn't mean they're practical. They're sometimes dirty problems. They're technical issues. Water is very useful, and in the process of its use, it's often polluted with all kinds of waste products, chemicals, and other materials. But water itself has a sacred quality. The stuff is just magical. Beautiful. Of course, I need to be careful when I make the distinction between sacred and profane, because that's a human construct. I would argue from my personal theology that it's all sacred. Others might argue that it's all profane. But having said that, water is special. Topic this morning is to be water justice, and it seems to me that justice also has a profane and a sacred side. Profane side being when we have laws and regulations that allow the RCMP to go in and tear down blockades on roads because that's the law. And then there's a spiritual side of justice. And that's not recorded as well, but we know it when we see it. When we see the Indigenous grandmother standing in the face of perhaps the RCMP or other authorities, becomes an issue of spiritual justice. There's also issues of spiritual power and profane power. Mari spoke to us just not very long ago about the accumulation of that profane power known as money and wealth, how that governs how we operate as a society. And there always has been a spiritual power. And when I listen to that song, "We Are the People Come" by Sarah Thompson, you recognize the spiritual power there. And undeniable spiritual power. But water is magical. It's crystal clear, it's tasteless, it's odorless, it's colorless. It exists in our everyday environment in three different states, as a gas, water vapor, as a solid, ice, and as a liquid. It expands slightly before freezing, and I think this is a rare quality amongst liquids. But that's what ensures that ice forms on the tops of our lakes and rivers. It would be impossible for life to survive in rivers and streams if they froze from the bottom to the top as they freeze solid. Water defines the most important processes on the planet. It's self-cleansing through the water cycle, evaporation, condensation, and precipitation. Every year, the earth is essentially washed clean with distilled water in the form of rain. Enough water to cover the entire surface of the earth to a depth of 1 meter. Every year. Water is essential for life as we know it. It's almost certain that life began in water. that in our high density, high consumption lifestyle that is the modern world, this reliance on the self-cleansing renewal characteristics of water has often exceeded the capability of natural systems to cleanse themselves. We've historically dumped all our sewage into rivers and lakes and oceans, knowing that fresh rainwater would flush the rivers and lakes and the tides would carry the pollution out away from the shore. Water has this profane, this functional, this commodity side. Water can be managed, pumped, and filtered, moved over great distances. Irrigation is essential to many crops. Water is pumped from deep within the earth to irrigate crops on the surface. And the engineering marvel that is the modern city's water supply and sewage treatment system is the single biggest advance in the history of human health. We take water from rain-fed lakes and further purify it before we pump it into the homes of 400,000 people here, just in Halifax. And then we use that same magical crystal water to flush our toilets and carry our sewage and other pollutants to wastewater treatment plants, where the water is cleaned as best we can before it's released to the environment again. The wastewater treatment plant closest to us here on Upper Water Street treats 340,000 cubic meters of water every day. For those of my age, that's 900 million gallons of water. And that's one of seven large water treatment plants within HRM. And then there's another seven smaller plants. The musical video that was played before the meditation was composed to support the indigenous protesters trying to protect the waters of Standing Rock Reservation in North Dakota. Many of the environmental movements to protect water have a strong indigenous component. And it's something that I think we've all become more and more aware of over the last 5 to 10 years. For many indigenous leaders, this is a sacred task. In our own province, I mentioned the controversy around pulp and gas caverns, Boat Harbor, Northern Pulp, fracking for natural gas. These movements to protect water all have a significant indigenous involvement. The indigenous worldview emphasizes the sacred nature of water. When preparing for this sermon, I was reading from a report of a workshop organized by indigenous people here just a few years ago. The report spoke over and over again of water as sacred. It spoke about how we must learn to listen to water in order to protect it. I'm an engineer. I studied things like water treatment plants, but I don't remember any professor telling me to listen. Indigenous protests related to protecting water invariably involve ceremony and prayer. And the report ends with these words: "We all have a responsibility to look after water and our Mother Earth, for decolonizing our relationship with water, for working to restore our connections and roles to protecting water, and restoring the respect for Indigenous water stewardship and management practices. In this way, water can lead us to a place of togetherness, unity, and peace."
The QuickBooks Self-Employed app gives contractors and freelancers the power of an entire staff in a single app. Tap on automatic mileage to track every trip your business takes whenever you drive.
But along with that sacred side that the indigenous people talk about so much, water also has this undeniable profane side. It's used for moving huge container ships. The biggest container ships in the world are going to be coming into Halifax Harbor. For transporting our domestic and our industrial waste, we have this huge system built up with pumps all over the HRM to do that. To transport domestic and industrial waste from home and business to our highly mechanized treatment centers. While the pollution of Boat Harbor by the Northern Pulp Mill is an abomination on both sacred and profane grounds, it's not as clear a case as the proposal for a pipe of treated effluent from the paper mill into the Northumberland Straits. And many here might want to argue that with me. But the profane side of water needs to be managed. It's my understanding, for example, that the proposals for the Alton Gas Storage Cavern is a project that can be done in a way that will have no measurable impact on the Shubenacadie River system. I'm not an expert, but I believe, from what I've read, that it can be done. But that makes me think about the indigenous phrase, two-eyed seeing, and how it can be applied to this situation. If we're to protect the natural environment and at the same time preserve and enhance our economic and social well-being, we need to see water from both perspectives, profane and sacred, with two eyes. When we see with two eyes, we're able to see depth. That's what our two eyes give us, is depth perception. That's what binoculars give us. We're able to perceive the complexity of situations. We have a third dimension to our thinking and our reasoning. The profane side of our economy is powerful. We're governed by money. Where will the money come from? How will we spend the money? Do we have enough money for this?
Can you tell us what you mean by profane? Can you explain that to us? As if we may have never heard the word before.
Okay. In the way I'm using it here, I'm just contrasting it with sacred. Profane being all of the things that have nothing to do with spirit. They just have to do with getting the job done. Just accomplishing things without any thought to any spiritual being behind what we're doing. Thank you. So how might we engage our two eyes when we're trying to manage this resource and deal with the spirituality that is water? A couple of years ago, I had an example here, and I've used it before, but there was a little cove on the ocean here, just outside of Halifax, that at the time had been, they were going to build a condominium, and they were going to fill this little cove infill it, and some people produced some excellent videos of what was there, the wildlife that lived in this little cove, the fish and the birds that depended on the fish and the animals that used this little part of the inlet. And I thought, inevitably we have to treat water profanely for some of our objectives. And an example, just the building that we're in here, this was forest, at one time sacred forest. There were animals, there were rainwater being absorbed, there was moss, there was lichens, there was ponds. Right across the river, Sweetwater, Allen could show us more again on here, but we were known for this river that ran down here to the harbor where ships would get fresh water from this little stream. It's gone. We wouldn't be able to be in this building. So you have to sacrifice something. But it is a sacrifice. And could it be a spiritual sacrifice? So before I'm thinking of the indigenous people again, when they take an animal like a moose, they recognize that it's a sacrifice. There's a spiritual ritual that's performed, usually involving tobacco, to thank the animal for giving its life, but it had to be done. It was necessary. And I thought, gee, if we had made a decision that we need to sacrifice this little pond, then could we have a ceremony? Could we have a religious ceremony and come down and acknowledge what we're doing and say, it's sad, but this needs to be done. We need to give this up. And in that process, would we become more human? Would we become more spiritual, more alive? It's the ability to see the sacred and the profane and to hold both in our minds as we struggle to bring more justice and love into the world, it would be a challenge for any faith tradition. Unitarian Universalists are called to use our head, our heart, and our hands. We're called by problems of the sacred and the profane. We're well qualified to deal with depths of perception that come from two-eyed seeing. As I prepare to close, I'd like to share a story told by Rabbi David Wolf. A boy and his father were walking along a road when they came across a large stone in the road. And the young boy, as young boys will be, was looking for a challenge for his strength. And he asked his dad, "Do you think if I use all my strength, I can move that rock?" And the father answered, "If you use all your strength, I am absolutely sure that you can." So the boy began to push on the rock. He exerted himself with as much as he could. He pushed and he pushed, but that rock didn't move. Finally discouraged, he turned to his father and said, "You were wrong. I can't do it." The father put his arm around the boy's shoulder and said, "No, son. You didn't use all of your strength. You didn't ask me to help." If we're going to bring about modern justice, we're going to need to use all of our strength. We're going to need to see the problem with both eyes, the sacred and the profane. May it be so.